Get ready for the O'Shelley Effect.
Last day of August. Oh, look at that. Last day of August 2022. That would be the 31st day of August 2022. And therefore, Wednesday as I go live here at Ocelli.com. And how do I know all of this? You're listening to the show you're looking for. Yeah. Now I just did everything backwards. It's Wednesday. And that means that we have the wild card. Now, this is interesting because I've got two candidates. One of them I definitely will take seriously, and you'll find out which one by the end of the show, I think. New York, interesting place, not just the city. You know, I know all around the country everybody thinks of New York City as New York, and it is a thing unto itself, but there is the rest of the state to consider. And what I find curious here is that there's a Libertarian candidate in the state of New York for the governor's mansion. Now, odd, because as I've talked about many times on the show, I mean, there is a sort of a prescription for New York politics. You know how the city runs. You know kind of how the state runs if anybody ever pays attention. And they did pay attention the past couple of years because of a, let's say a governor that made headlines. And, yeah, he wound up getting out of there after getting real popular and all that good stuff. And he was a second-generation governor and so on and so forth. And I really had no desire to support him, his father, okay? Although his father was a better version of the guy than was there before. Who am I talking about? Andy Cuomo, right? And, of course, I talked about Chris, and we talked about what happened with CNN and the conflict of interest. And does everybody even remember this at this point? Well, let's remember this. At all times, we can change the equation. So how about the Libertarian candidate for governor for New York? I think that's a good thing. I think that is definitely a good thing to discuss. And it so happens I have him with me tonight. Larry Sharp. Man, first of all...
I made it, so thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have too many politicians on the show, okay? Believe that. Because,
well, I am super special, so it's good.
Oh, you are. You are. I guarantee you that. I'm going to tell you now. I would not have Hochul on this show. I would not have whoever they're going to try and run, okay, on the GOP side.
Yep.
I would not have them on this show.
I call them the sacrificial lamb.
Yes. It's pointless. I might talk to Andy Cuomo.
That would be good. No, you get some good ratings on that one. That's probably a good. You should probably do that one if that comes up.
I would talk to him, but I know it would last 5 minutes. Okay, because you know I used to listen. I'm not sure how old you are, but I used to listen to Bob Grant when I was a kid. Right?
I remember Bob Grant. I used to, believe it or not, I used to sell ad space for him at WOR Radio.
Nice. Okay, so you're well familiar with the salute he had for many years from Mario Cuomo, and
yes, indeed, absolutely. I actually knew I'd met Bob Grant more than once personally.
Excellent. Look, I appreciated him. Now, I am not a conservative nor a liberal by any classic or newer modern sense, but see, I used to think I was a libertarian actually back then, which is weird.
I think you are. I'm going to draw you back in.
Okay. And that's the only political party I've ever registered for, by the way. I've registered as independent or libertarian my whole life.
There we go.
But weird because the definition has changed. So I want you to help me out. Now, some people would say, well, what is a libertarian candidate going to do in New York? I have a funny feeling you're going to do better than even.
Yes, I have a lot of stuff I can tell you about. But let me give you a simple definition to work off of for anybody.
Good.
Libertarian is someone who says you can be as liberal or as conservative as you want to be. Just don't force your views on others. That means we try to have more localism than centralized control. We want more families to have more control than we want to have larger organizations have more control. We want to be able to have community to have an actual chance, not only government, but government and community to be part of people's lives. And I think even more importantly, it doesn't mean we aren't conservative or liberal. It just means that I want to use my personality, my works, my community, my example to get you to be the way I want you to be. I want to use persuasion and not coercion. That really is a good general idea of what libertarianism is.
And that's great because that I can get on board with, you see.
Yes. And in today's society where we're so polarized left and right, clearly I'm biased, but I feel like that's the only way we're going to be able to talk to each other again. If I just go, okay, you know, maybe I'm not liberal enough for you, or maybe I'm not conservative enough for you, but you know what? We can talk because I'm going to let you do you, you're going to let me do me, and we can have a conversation.
See, now there you have it, but there has been in the past decade or so, quite frankly, a really strong infiltration of individuals that I think really wanted to join the GOP, okay? And they couldn't get there. They were not invited under that tent up until, well, the time of Trump. And I don't necessarily want to sit here and discuss Trump with you because you know what? You're not involving yourself in the, blue or red argument here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're actually making a different argument. So we're not going to contaminate it with that. But at that time, it seemed as though a lot more libertarian candidates that were true libertarians were getting invited back into the mainstream. And I thought this was a good thing, but it was under strange circumstances because previous to that, there were a whole bunch of people who were too conservative for the conservatives that somehow adopted the libertarian thing. There, all of a sudden, there was some money for libertarian candidates.
Yep.
Okay. And this kind of thing happened, and I didn't like it. I got to be honest with you, because I felt like it was just the co-opting and hijacking of what should be a completely separate idea.
Yep. Well, okay. Let me let you know what usually happens in the case of libertarians. Libertarians tend to be against whoever's in charge. So what does that mean? That means that by default, we tend to lean the opposite of the organization. So for example, in New York State is a super blue state, obviously. Libertarian Party leans right. In Oklahoma, it's a red state. Libertarian Party leans left. That tends to happen even within the nation. So when Biden's president, Libertarian Party tends to lean right. When Trump's president, Libertarian Party tends to lean left. Because that's where the people who feel like they're not getting what they want from the leadership, they're looking for something else, and they tend to come to us.
Well, see, as a kid in New Jersey, right, which is where I first became eligible to vote, I really liked the Libertarian Party, the way it was laid out, the platform, the idea that, you know, first and foremost on the literature I got was the drug war is a scam and a sham.
Yep.
Okay. And I said, well, I know that from bottom line experience. I know this is a war on people. I grew up in bad neighborhoods. This is life. Okay.
As did I. I grew up in the South Bronx.
Well, there you go. Okay. Yep. So I grew up in the pre-gentrified parts of Jersey that were just abandoned and ignored, like Asbury Park and stuff like that. Now, today you go to Asbury Park and it's, you know, they got wine stores and things.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah.
But when I grew up there, there was, you know, burnt out buildings. There was the wreckage of what used to be commerce, okay? Mm-hmm. And you were lucky if you lived in the government projects.
Right.
Right? And I grew up and down the shore and then spent time in New York. And when I went to New York, it was in Manhattan, and that's a whole other story. But getting into politics as, like, a kid, sure. I said, you know what? I want to go along with this, but the Libertarian Party in New Jersey was a disaster. It was rudderless, you know, let's be honest, in 1990, it was rudderless. Okay. Yep. And I wind up voting on the presidential ticket. First time I get to vote for president, I voted for Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Why did I vote for Bill Clinton? Because guess what? He was the opposite of what I thought I saw in power.
Right. Okay? Right. Yeah.
So notice that echo there, where it's, yeah, what is in power doesn't address the rest of us. And therefore, yeah, you got to push back.
Absolutely.
And attitude is exactly what attracted me to it. And I saw it in the literature, and I saw it in some of the people that were enthusiastic, but there wasn't enough of them in New Jersey.
I think what you just said, a lot of people believe that. And when they voted for Perot, I was a Perot guy. I liked Perot, and then I liked Nader. I was like, I didn't know what libertarianism was back then, but I just knew I didn't like the establishment. So I was against the Democrats, Republicans. I was just voting, you know, like that. But I think a lot of younger people, they actually probably thought that Obama was Bill Clinton for them, right? They probably thought Obama was going to do something. And when they realized he fell into the same category as the rest, I think a lot of them decided to walk away, and they jumped on Ron Paul, or they jumped on Libertarian Party or something like that.
Right. Well, see, now Perot was the guy I would have voted for. Problem with Perot is that he made me gun shy because he jumped in, he jumped out.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yep. I remember
that. That's what went wrong with Perot.
Absolutely.
But otherwise, I probably would have voted for him. Now I was left with, there's only really two choices, you know. Yes. And again, I was 18 or 19 when I kind of just fell for that. And after my time with Clinton in office and that wonderful, you know, we got the credit cards. It seemed like things were working well. The economy felt better for a lot of us.
It did.
But then, you know, came time to pay the piper, and we find out maybe not so much. And as we're getting to know that, quite frankly, the Bush regime comes in, and we instantaneously have the war on terror, which, got to tell you, being anti-war also seems to be a libertarian concept as well.
100%.
Why do we want to get involved in foreign entanglements? The old cliche, we haven't taken care of everything at home. Why are we going somewhere else?
It's why so many veterans are libertarians. I'm a Marine vet. I joined the Marine Corps in 1985. And when I came out, I was not pro-war anymore. And when I joined as a 17-year-old kid, I was all gung-ho. My first, when I joined, it was still a Soviet Union. So I was all about going to go kill the communists and we're going to rule the world. I bought all of that stuff. But then when I came out, I had bought none of it.
Right. Well, see, and that's the thing. Again, establishing what libertarianism is, and you did it so concisely, we don't have to really get more into the definition. So let's get into why it is that you're involved and also some other things that I've hinted to here. I want to know personally why it is you're taking a run at this, what it is you think needs to be addressed. Yep. We could go into the corruption, but, I mean, it's also Wednesday. I mean, corruption in New York politics, it's Wednesday. This is something so commonplace.
Right.
The only thing, and again, I told you where I grew up, so the only thing more corrupt than New York politics is the politics in Jersey.
But there we go.
You don't have to deal with that right now. Right. Let's talk about New York. Because, again, the rest of the country really does think of New York as just the city.
I agree. And I think the thing that people should realize here is if you don't live in New York, you should still care about New York. Why? Because New York is a real battleground state for government overreach. We are where it all begins. Everyone else copies us. The Cato Institute has ranked New York State the least free state for like 3 or 4 years in a row. So take that, California, we're worse. So we are the least free state there is. So whatever government's overreaching, if it works in New York, it's eventually coming to your state. So I felt that as early as 2016. And in 2017, I was actually going to leave the state. I was going to move, by the way, down south to North Carolina. For what I do in my day job, I'm a business consultant, and I need a lot of large businesses or a large city around me so I can make my money, which is why I live in New York City, obviously, where all the big businesses are. So I thought, you know what? I'll move to Charlotte, North Carolina. There's many big businesses there. It's a decent-sized city. I can make a living there. So I go down there and check it out, and I realize I can sell my shoebox of a house in Queens. And if you know Queens, you know what I mean by shoebox. I have a shoebox of a house in Queens. I could sell that, buy a mansion in North Carolina, less taxes, better lifestyle. I thought, this is great. But I didn't move. Instead, I got angry. I said, why does my state suck? Why does my beautiful state that literally has everything in it that you could possibly imagine, from the biggest city in the country, mountains, lakes, falls, hunting, skiing, baseball, football, I mean, the Met, anything that, whatever you're into, New York State has it. It doesn't matter. But my government is so oppressive that it literally breaks up families. And I said, I'm mad. I'm going to go back. I'm going to run for governor. And I'm going to fix, I'm going to win and fix everything. As you can see, that did not go as planned. But while I was running and angry, that's when I saw this, the thing you just mentioned, all the corruption and nastiness and unfairness when I was running. And when I saw that, I decided I'm going to run again because I want to try to fix that. That's why I'm running again, right? Because I want to do that. Now, for those who don't know, one of the hardest things in any third party is just getting your name listed on the ballot. That's called ballot access. And in most states, it is a very hard thing to do. And people get mad and go, why don't you third parties, you know, have better candidates or run more people? Because literally, they make it impossible to get on the ballot. And if you get on the ballot, the Democrats, Republicans will actually sue you in court to throw you off the ballot. And judges consistently agree with the Democrats, Republicans, and literally throw people off the ballot. That is a very common tactic used. So what happened to me...
Up and down the ballot, sorry. By the way, just really quickly, down the ballot, like some people think, okay, this is about the presidential. No, it's town councils, they'll do this. And in Jersey, too, by the way, this is why I told you there was like non-existent libertarians in Jersey.
Yep.
I mean, there were a couple of libertarian like sheriffs. Mm. Real. That was like the most libertarian presence I saw on the ballot the year that Clinton ran for president and won. Right.
Yep. You know,
it beat Bush. And it was absolutely insane. That has been going on now for decades.
100%.
Where they get these people removed. Or another fun thing they try to do is change the standards while you're in the middle of doing it.
Yes. That literally happened to me this time. What a perfect segue. In New York State, we have a very special way of getting that ballot access or party status, as they also call it. And that is, it goes only through the governor's race. I don't know why that's our rule, but that's our rule. It's only through the governor's race. So literally, we could have had, you know, a libertarian win the presidential, you know, election. We could have had a libertarian senator. Does not matter. It only happens through the governor's race. That is our law, and that's unique to New York. So you had to get, in the past, 15,000 signatures, valid signatures across the state. And then if you did that, you can get your name on the ballot. Then if you were able to, with the name on the ballot, get 50,000 votes on election day in the general election, then you could have party status and people just go on the ballot for everyone in your party and move on. Now, Democrats, Republicans have been having that for literally hundreds of years. We finally got it in 2018 when I ran last time. I was able to get all the signatures and get 100,000 votes, and boom, we got it. I was like, yes, we have it. I can then start making some local change. To your point, local change. What happened is the next year, as I crossed the state, we got 107 local victories. There were 107 local libertarians, you know, like you were talking about, the local guys, like the city council, the aldermans, right? We got a bunch of them elected across the state. We went from zero libertarians to 107. And then the Democratic Party that was in charge at the time said, oh, yeah, no, you can't do that. Remember that whole thing about 15,000 and 50,000? Yeah, we were kidding. What we meant was 45,000 and 130,000. And not just that, we're going to keep the six-week window, but we're going to move it earlier to where in New York State there are snowstorms to make sure literally no one can get it. And then if you do happen to get it, you get 130,000 votes, which nobody else was getting. So they made it impossible. And right in the middle, I assumed, as anyone would, that every 4 years you are going to have ballot access. That's what it's been for decades. They went, no, we're going to change it in the middle. And not just that, we're going to change it on a budget line item. That's how we're a budget line item, and we're going to end everything. And they destroyed my party with a stroke of a pen right in the middle of the 4 years. So we sued them, obviously, saying you can't do that. You can change the rules, but not in the middle of this. You can't do that. And they went, no, we don't care. And then I said, well, no, you can't. Not only can you not do that, you can't just take away people's voting rights. They want to vote for a third party. They said, no, only two parties. Sorry. Didn't care.
Okay.
Did not care at all.
Let's dissect that for a second, because there's a couple of tough things here that, again, other people in other parts of the country might not necessarily understand.
Sure.
the weather is a big problem because during a certain part of the year, look, you guys see somebody standing outside trying to get signatures on all kinds of petitions, right?
Yep.
And it could be for, you know, and I'm not saying to you, you know this. I'm saying to people, you know, it could be about the local water plant. It could be about, do you want to allow another convenience store in your town? It could be about all sorts of ballot issues. But anyway, you see people, they're outside of a grocery store. They're outside of a place where people are gathering one way or another, okay? They might go to the minor league baseball game.
Sure. Right?
And set up.
It's the county fair.
County fair. Good one. Sure. So anyway, but during a certain time of year in New York, okay, throughout the state, that's almost impossible. There's nobody wanting to stand outside. All right. And in the most populous areas, it's worse.
Yep.
Because you look at, let's just go for the ones everybody knows. Buffalo, New York, wonderful place. I played there as a musician. I never lived there. But Buffalo, you could literally see 3 feet of snow.
Yes, you're right.
Now, the people in Buffalo are not freaked out by this. They just go, oh, okay, we got to clean this up.
Right.
I showed up one time to play a place. I end up with 3 feet of snow. I figure the show's going to be canceled. And they're like, nah, just, you know, go take a nap. Watch what happens. They cleared it up, got in there. People showed up. 3 feet of snow, they just deal with it, okay?
Yep.
But during the time when they're cleaning that up, which is constant, nobody wants to stand outside. Nobody's going to listen to your spiel. You know, whether somebody would have signed your petition or not, they don't care because they're freezing, first of all. And secondly, you might have snow or whatever pounding you in the face. You don't want to sit there and listen to the guy say, hey, listen, I got a third party here.
Right.
And whatever it is,
Darian,
who's going to want to listen to you in the middle of like snow pounding on your face?
Exactly right. And I think they did that too on purpose. And so we told them it would be impossible. And they said no. So we lost our lawsuits. Then we tried anyway. And to be forward, there were three people who tried. Me, a sitting congressman, and a multimillionaire guy worth almost $50 million.
Okay.
None of us made it. That's how impossible it is. Me, a guy with a party and done it before, a multimillionaire worth $50 million, and a currently sitting congressman in one of the major two parties. None of us could make it. So we resued. Because then at this point, last time the Democrats threw me off, this time Republicans threw me off. I actually did get on the ballot, but then they sued me off the ballot. And they've sued me in civil court outside of the Board of Elections to force the judge to throw me off, and he did. So I'm off the ballot.
Okay.
So now I'm trying to get back on the ballot. The judge, I told the judge the same thing. Look, I get that before you thought it wasn't impossible. Now, look, it's impossible. Look at it. I'm giving you the data now. It's impossible. And the judge was like, nope, sorry, threw me off. So now we have another lawsuit now. That I'm hoping this appeal will win, and coming up here September 9th, I'm hoping we'll win this one. If we win that one, we're back in the ballot, and I will be the only independent candidate, the gubernatorial candidate, on the ballot this year because everyone else quit. They just said, we're done. We're not even trying this anymore. It's impossible. And if I don't win it, I won't be on the ballot, and it will be the first time in almost 80 years that in New York State there will not be an independent governor's candidate on the ballot in 80 years. But I will still be running a write-in anyway. Because if I get my 130,000 write-in votes, I still get my party status. As you know, though, it's much harder getting write-in votes than it is, you know, checking a box on a ballot. However, there is some good news here. Our second largest city, you just mentioned, Buffalo, the current mayor of Buffalo, you may not know this if you're not around here, just won last year with a write-in vote. So there is some precedent, some history of me getting a write-in.
Well, that's actually why I mentioned Buffalo specifically because that person had the ability to get in there with a write-in.
Yep.
And that was, I can't remember the mayor's name off the top of my head, but it doesn't matter. The point is that it can be done, and even in the most inclement of weather, because weather's not the only factor.
Sure.
But back to it, like you just said, though, there's always been at least one independent candidate.
Yep.
Now, they have been from, you know, non-party affiliated.
Sure.
To Libertarian, as you said, you got on.
Yep.
But the thing is, it's very, very hard. And if you're trying to do a write-in, it's not necessarily, you know, completely impossible, but it makes it a lot harder.
A lot harder. You're correct. It's not impossible. It's just harder. The issue, though, that I also brought up, which, again, judges, I'm so disappointed in our judges here in New York State. I said, don't you understand? This is what I said to the judge. Don't you understand that the vast majority of people who run as third parties are aware the odds of their victory are slim to none. We get it when we run. So if you're going to run, take your time, money, and energy. And I raised $500,000 last time when I ran. I raised almost that much this time. And I put $10,000 of my own dollars into this. And I don't work for a year. Why would I do that? Because I'm bored? No. Because I fooled myself believing I'm going to be the next governor tomorrow? No. Because I want to make sure people have a protest vote, and I want people to hear me and my ideas, which I'm happy to talk about a couple of those now. But I want them to hear my ideas and do this. By default, it is a protest vote. By default, it is political speech, which means when you throw me off the ballot, you are ruining and ending and you are disenfranchising my First Amendment rights. You are absolutely disenfranchising me and, worse, 100,000 New Yorkers who want to vote for me. You are disenfranchising 100,000 voters. But if you let me on the ballot, and I don't understand why every judge doesn't understand this, if you let me on the ballot, there is no harm. If you don't like me, just don't vote for me. And literally millions of New Yorkers did that last time. So I have evidence that New Yorkers will do it. If you don't like me, you won't vote for me. There is no harm to being on the ballot, but clear harm not being on the ballot. And well, they just keep doing it.
Well, here's the other thing, though, and I want to make this real clear, and I know I've got listeners in New York that need to understand this. You don't even have to like Larry or his ideas, because here's the thing. You're fed up. A lot of you are. I know yes. You are. Fed up with the two-party machine.
Yep.
You're fed up with, you know, look, everybody's got their issues with Cuomo going out. We don't need to go and waste time on that. You can go research it for yourself. But the Republicans in the state of New York, same kind of problems. I mean, really.
Yes.
You dig enough, you can find corruption. You can find all kinds of. You're fed up with the two-party deal. Okay. You know you are. Even if you don't agree with the libertarians, if you make enough of a mark with that vote, okay.
Yes.
It will do something, actually.
100%. Let me touch that specifically. First, the Republican piece, if I could. The New York State has not had a Republican win a statewide election. Nothing. Not a senator, governor, lieutenant governor, you know, controller, nothing in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. And the state is getting bluer. Now it's almost 3-1 Democrat Republican. There is no chance of Republican winning a statewide election. To say you're throwing your vote away on me is to laugh if you can throw your vote away on the Republican. The Republican, in this case, is what I call the sacrificial lamb, has already raised $12 million. He's taken $12 million. He suckered 12 million Republicans into giving him money, and he will just throw away. And already, right now, his most recent polling, he's behind by 20 points. There's no way he wins. It's impossible. So what's going to happen? Well, I got to vote for him. Why? So he can come in second. They've been coming in second for 20 years, yet my state is losing population, losing people, growing a budget, and we've lost so many people, we lost a congressman. Coming in second does nothing if you're Republican. But what if I come in second? If I come in second, there's actual change. Your point is exactly on the money here. How New York State works is the top two parties, as decided by the governor's race, run the Board of Elections. That would mean it will be Democrats and Libertarians running the elections. Now, in reality, there's not enough Libertarians necessarily to do so. So they'll have to rewrite the rules. And that's okay. But when they rewrite the rules, they'll have to include third parties, which means my state will go from a one-party democracy to a multi-party democracy overnight. There will be actual change if I even come in second. So I don't even have to win to make change. And if I win, oh, my God, the world changes. Imagine if New York State goes from blue to gold. Oh, my God. I mean, the entire country realizes that third parties can actually win. And it has happened before. And again, my example is the 90s. It was Jesse Ventura who won in Minnesota as an independent. And the way to do that is to get in the debates. If I win my appeal, I'll be on the ballot. And the League of Women Voters has already said they will put me in the debates. I get in debates. This becomes a winnable race.
Well, the League of Women Voters still runs the debates in New York, huh?
Officially, yes.
Okay, because, you know, in some other places, not so much. And I used to appreciate when they did it because it I don't know, seemed more fair.
I think it was. I think you're right. I think it was. Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. And that's the thing. You bring up Perot, right, before, and that was the key, is once he got in people's faces, once he got in the public eye, this is what made it work. You know, I mean, everybody made the jokes about the charts and this and that.
I remember the charts. Yes, absolutely.
But he got just a couple of sound bites in, and that's all it took. That was a serious thing. If it wasn't for the fact that he dropped out, came back in, and all this,
Didn't he say like somebody was trying to kill his daughter or something? Did he have some kind of scandal like that?
Yeah, which, you know, turns out that there may have been, it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just his imagination.
Maybe. Oh, it was real.
Yeah, I mean, it took years to figure out, but it sounded crazy at the time because, yeah, you know, what are you going to do? But and he was a controversial figure for a lot of reasons, not just because of his presidential run. Fair enough. But here's the thing about you getting a ballot access. Like you were talking about earlier, let's go back. This allows libertarian candidates to have a presence elsewhere.
Yes.
See, and it provides you another option. Again, another protest vote emerges because you have the ability to look, you're fed up with both parties. I understand. I almost don't want to, you know, do anything.
Yes.
When it comes to this anymore. And I'm in Georgia, which is funny because the only gubernatorial candidate I've ever endorsed, Ted Metz, right?
Yes. Well, you know, Shane Hazel's running now.
Oh, yeah. But Ted got 2% of the vote, I think. Mm-hmm. Just barely 2% of the vote. And that was not right. I mean, I got to tell you, not right at all. But they hindered him at every turn they could. And you would think that Georgia would be, more likely to go libertarian than New York, okay?
Yep.
But no, the way that they suppressed Ted here, and again, good guy and everything. I've talked to him off air and stuff, but I had him on the show. There was like nothing that we could do to help him. But, you know, this is the thing. This is more significant in New York than it was in Georgia for the Libertarian Party. Again, as you stated, this would allow the ballot access to be available all over the place.
Yes.
You know, some people could, look at who the best candidate is, as opposed to just going for the affiliation.
Well, let me touch one more piece, if I could, here. This is a situation to where when you don't have a third party, mm-hmm. almost every single argument is simply, I'm not the other guy. So if you lean left, you say, I'm not a Republican. If you lean right, you go, I'm not a Democrat. That's the entire campaign. No one has any actual ideas. No one wants to actually solve anything. We just want to make sure that I'm going to protect you from the evil other guy. I know I'm a murderer, but he's a multi-murderer. So really, who do you really want? You don't want someone who's killed like four people, just one. That's where we are. Lesser of two evils. It's a terrible place to be.
Exactly. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to take a quick break here, and I do mean a quick break. And then I want to get into your specific ideas, you.
Okay.
Okay, because, again, as I said, you don't even have to agree with Larry's ideas here because just the process of the protest vote is useful in New York, okay? And this would be a way you could write it in and put it in place. Now, I do hope you get on the ballot again.
Me too.
But if you are in a write-in position, this is how it becomes worth the effort to do it.
Yes.
And you know what? A bunch of people that I know would otherwise stay home. Maybe you don't have to. Maybe you can show up and write something in with your own hand that will cause a change, an actual effect. All right. Anyway, Larry Sharpe is with me, and he is, not on the ballot at the moment, but still, they're in court, and he could be the guy you can write in for the governor of New York. Coming up, stick around. The Ocelli Effect will return after this.
This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you're listening to The Ocelli Effect at Ocelli.com.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver. The stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Wrong. That's what's so funny. I switched glasses when your back was turned. Ha ha, you fool. You fell victim to one of the classic blunders. The most famous is never get involved in a land war in Asia. But only slightly less well known is this. Never go in against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Second segment of the Ocelli Effect tonight here on a Wednesday, and we have the Libertarian candidate for governor of the state of New York, and that man's name is Larry Sharp. Now, just in case you have to write in his name, okay, Sharp, and he is currently in court, and we're hoping that he doesn't have to, be written in, but if you do, Sharp is spelled S-H-A-R-P-E.
E stands for electable. Don't forget that.
E stands for electable at the end of Sharp. I got cousins named Sharp, but they don't have the E at the end. I don't think they're electable. It's cool.
They shouldn't run. They're going to be in trouble.
There you go. But Larry, I want to hear from you about the ideas. You said, I have ideas about things I'd like to see changed. And in New York, that could be a lot of stuff.
It is a lot. Sometimes it's actually overwhelming, right? The biggest issue we have to worry about is people leaving the state. We are bleeding people. Some say now 300,000 per year. We have a thing in New York State called zombie houses, meaning people who've just packed up and left, aren't paying their rent, aren't paying their mortgage, leave the house and say, come sue me, good luck. They just leave. That's how bad it is in my state. To fix that, we got to focus on three things. We have to focus on affordability. We've got to focus on safety, and also opportunity, those three. So I want to be able to give people services that they want without raising taxes. Because once you start raising taxes, people start leaving. And we've already lost in the last two years, about $23 billion worth of net worth has walked away from New York State. We've got to keep that here. They're all going to Florida and Texas. So the first thing I'm going to do is I want to find ways of paying for infrastructure, for example, here in New York City. I live in New York City, but all the cities have the same issues. High taxation, bad infrastructure. This is what we should do. Lease out naming rights to bridges. So we have bridges and tunnels all across New York City. Instead of it being the RFK Bridge or the Ed Koch Bridge, now it can be the Pepsi Bridge, the Google Bridge, the Mobile Exxon Bridge, whatever it is, the Amazon Bridge. I don't care. Whatever you want to name it, and they'll pay us $100 million a year for that bridge. People say, Larry, they pay that much money? Of course. They pay $20 million for a stadium that they use on the weekends. I'm giving you a bridge that at least 1 million people cross physically every single day, a 16 million metro person area, mentioned on every radio station in that area multiple times a day and during traffic reports, on the Google Maps, and on top of it, all the new TV and shows that are being made, they always show the skyline of New York City, and now your name's on that bridge, so you get even product placement. They'll happily pay for it. You do that to 10, 12 bridges, you start raising $1 billion. Now you're able to supplement the MTA to give people a cheaper ride without raising taxes, but more importantly, no tolls on the bridges. Right now, when you live in New York, you notice tolls on most of the bridges, and some of them now are up to $18 one way.
Right.
If you are an owner-operator truck driver, you're paying per axle. You are getting murdered. So instead, get rid of all that stuff, easier back and forth for people to get around, cheaper for the people to be on MTA. It helps the working poor and the middle class, and it doesn't raise taxes on anybody. Instead, these people will happily put this in. But I'm still not done. That won't be enough. You also got to add freight into the MTA. What does that mean? And you used to live in New York City. At nighttime, the subways don't run at the same level. They run every second, every third train. Well, right. Let's make every other train a freight train. Freight will come into New York City during the day. We can lease out the naming rights on the actual hubs. They can rebuild out some of the train stations and tracks. You might go, Larry, can they afford it? Yes. Literally, the marketing budget for Google is $10 billion. There are many of companies that would happily build out with their marketing to build it out to get them to have some preferential treatment to bring all the stuff into New York City. If you bring freight into New York City at night, guess what? Less trucks in the city, less wear and tear on the roads, less big trucks in the city, less dead pedestrians, less dead cyclists, and now all of a sudden we're being greener. All of that begins to happen in New York without anybody paying more, supporting a new MTA, letting the working poor and the middle class get around our city better. That's an actual plan, a libertarian plan, with no new taxes, and no Democrat and no Republican is bringing that up.
Well, it seems like a no-brainer to me because, look, it's already been monetized. They put up advertising, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of these deals, I don't know how all of them work, but I saw how a couple of them worked out. And clearly you get this, you know, really ubiquitous kind of presence in a major area just locally. Like you said, immediately you have that audience plus all of the mentions. Now, let's not forget that there's a whole lot of like TV shows and stuff like that, which are filmed in and around New York. So,
oh, yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is product placement. You'll have it in the entertainment business automated as well, because if you're using the Pepsi Bridge, okay, they're going to mention it on, like, say, Law and Order. They're going to mention it on, you know, the latest Marvel property or whatever.
Yes, you're right. Yep.
You know, so they're going to have to. And they'll say, well, wait a minute. And it'll probably be a joke, too, so it'll stand out. You know, wait a minute. What's the name of that place? Oh, now it's the Pepsi Bridge. Right. Well, next year it might be the Coke Bridge. I don't know. They're going to.
No, the reality of it is, it's just an important piece. I talked already about to certain companies about leasing it, right? And it's got to be at least a 12-year lease. For that exact reason. And you also front load the lease, right? The city and I'm sorry, the state still owns the property, but you front load a 12-year lease. This way, in case they break the lease, you still get paid up front. In addition, we still inspect the bridge to make sure it's still safe. So they also are responsible for maintenance. If they don't maintain the bridge, they can, of course, then lose the contract and someone else take it. And as long as we're front loaded, we still get our money.
Well, all right.
I've thought this through.
Okay, no, that's why I was going to ask. That was going to be my next question. Good. Okay, so I'm actually tipping on some of the things that now some people would say, well, look, that's all great for New York City, but there's a lot more to the state than New York, as I
100%.
Said before. And that's the weird thing to me that you're bleeding population now because. Okay, I get it. Taxation is hard, and as I stated, I mean, I went from New Jersey to North Carolina a couple years ago and wound up in Georgia eventually, and it was all about monetary concerns. Okay, that's all it was. A lot of people made that calculation. Hey, I can go live in North or South Carolina, another place to go.
Yep.
And pretty much I can live in a house three times the size.
Yep.
Sell off my little place. I've still got money left over.
Mm-hmm.
I buy a place three times the size, and there's still big enough business. Now, there's nothing like New York when it comes to this.
Yep.
Okay. But you still have access to business in some of these other states, and you say to yourself, well, I'm going to make, you know, half the money, but I'm going to spend a quarter of what it
right.
is to live. Right. So, hey, win-win all the way around. I get it. This is why people are fleeing. But on the other hand, there is nothing like the state of New York for all of these diverse kind of anything you could possibly want.
100%.
Okay,
yes.
Outside of a desert.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's right. We don't have a desert. That's true. Everything else we got. Yes.
Yeah. Everything else you got. You got, you know, your natural stuff, like you said, hunting, fishing, all that stuff. Yep. Great stuff throughout the state. You have the four seasons. I know winter is kind of brutal, but, you know, you have four seasons, okay? You have every business opportunity, national, international, large, on a local scale. If you get a local business running well in New York, you're doing well, and almost anywhere in the state, I mean, it's almost a guarantee for success. If you can do it right in New York, I know this is all cliche, but it's true, though. I can make it here. I can make it anywhere.
Yep, absolutely. Yes,
Frank Sinatra from Jersey. But anyways, you know, yeah, you're right. But the thing is, it's tough to make it.
Yeah, and, but let me go to the other piece I want to bring up, right? I was being specific to the city because it's our biggest city, our largest population piece, and I wanted to let people know that we can do that there because the actual state still – the MTA is so broken, the state actually pays for it. So if you live upstate – you're actually paying for it. So it does affect you. But let me go across the state if I could.
Sure.
The next piece is, right now, we need to create a separate company that is a separate trust, a New York State social trust, copying what's happening right now in Norway and Singapore, places where they have a separate trust where permanent and private capital can invest into it. Why does that matter? Right now, permanent and private capital are buying up all of the real estate market, specifically in New York, but all across the country, making it very hard for people to buy houses and making a lot of people renters because they just can't afford it. We'll get them out of that and have them invest in this trust. This trust will pay them a dividend every year based upon the revenue that New York State makes. Meanwhile, they just have to fill it up to where it becomes eventually a trust large enough, similar to the other countries, about $1 trillion or so over time. As it begins to grow, that trust, which is being heavily subsidized by, not even subsidized, filled by permanent private capital looking for better investments, which is why they go to those other ones, they're sure thing investments, then that, within the first 2 years, can pay for all the education in New York State. When that pays for education in New York State, there's no need for school tax. There's no need for school tax, and school tax goes away. The average property owner across New York State, their property tax will drop by about 50%. A 50% drop in property tax affects by number of bodies, affects people upstate more than New York, because New York City has far more renters. So that means it'll affect them directly. Their lifestyle will change. Now add into that one more thing. If you are 65 years old and you've owned a home in New York State for at least 10 years, then your property tax goes down an additional 5% every year until 85 to where it's zero. If you decided you don't want to own a home or you want to live with your family, that family member who owns the home gets half of that benefit for the next 20 years. So either way, I'm encouraging two things: families to stay together and retirees to stay here in New York State and spend their pensions in New York State. They're not doing it. They're spending their pensions in Florida. I want you spending your pension in New York State, but I'm not mad at you for leaving. I get why you did, but I want to make a better environment for you to stay. Now, the pushback I get is, but Larry, you're losing tax revenue. We're not. The fund is paying for education, and if more seniors stay here, whatever we lose in property tax, we gain back in two things. One, people not leaving, so they're spending their pensions here. And two, less people going to nursing homes, which the state pays for. So they'll stay home with their family. You do that, that gives everybody across the state a property tax break. Hopefully, it will stabilize some rents. It'll encourage people to stay here, retirees to stay here, and the youth to rent here.
Mm-hmm. So, look, I have one question in the chat room, which I'm going to integrate into the next thing I want you to address, because you also brought this up about the three key things, why it is you're bleeding population, right?
Yep.
One of the problems is safety.
Yes.
Now, I point out to people that in the 1970s, in the late 70s, when I first encountered the streets in New York, it was a war zone. Okay?
Yes, it was.
It really was, and I don't think people appreciate that at all today, exactly how bad it was in the late 70s. But according to the way news travels now, it seems as though people think it's worse today than it was then.
Right.
It's not good. And I went through a couple of different time periods there. In the 90s, Alphabet City was, believe me, before anybody heard about the drug crisis, I mean, I could throw a stone into Tompkins Square Park where I lived, right?
That's not a great neighborhood. I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was dealing with, long before the opioid crisis, I knew what the heroin epidemic looked like. Okay.
Yep. Understood.
And it was rough. But today, that's a different area, sure. But much of the city is quite affected by a lot of different things. There's a lot of violence. Safety is a key issue.
Yep.
And it's one of those things that, again, now here's where we got to specifically address it from the libertarian side, because, New York has generally been a heavy gun control place.
Yes, it has. Some of the worst gun laws in the entire nation. I mean, horrible. When I say bad, I mean they punish people who legally own their firearm.
Right. Right. I mean, we used to have to deal with the equation of, even if somebody is breaking into your home and you shoot them, you're still probably in trouble. You know what
you
I mean?
You saw the bodega guy here in Manhattan, and the bodega guy, a guy literally comes in the bodega, goes behind the screen, is physically beating the guy up. It's on video. He draws a knife and stabs the guy. He goes to Rikers Island for days. Rikers Island is the most violent jail in the entire country. Why was he even arrested? It was on videotape. The guy came in. And by the way, the guy who was getting beat up was like in his 60s. The guy beating him up was physically bigger and in his 30s. So younger, stronger, physically hitting him, not threatening, physically grabbing, throwing and hitting him. And the guy went to jail. You can hear my blood boiling already, I'm sure.
Well, but here's the thing. That is not even, you know, oh my God, how outrageous is that? I'm not surprised, okay? Because I used to work convenience stores, right? Mm-hmm. And you at some point, you will be confronted by somebody.
Yep.
All right? Because it's just the nature of the beast, especially I used to work at night. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I was a night guy working in those places. Let me tell you, at some point, though, you're either going to wind up defending yourself with a bat, a gun, something.
Yep.
It's going to be necessary, not because you want to, but because you want to get home alive. Okay. Right. It's just that simple. And this is a problem. People talk about, you know, I mean, even when the mayor there, was it Adams, was running for office, he's sitting there on a live stream or whatever, and there's like a mugging going on over his shoulder.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, it's like, okay. And again, I think it was a war zone in the 70s. It's not good right now.
But I'm going to say something that no one else is going to say here. Yeah. Everyone begins to blame everything. I'm going to tell you what you actually have to blame. It's the COVID lockdowns. The COVID lockdowns are actually what made the spike. If you look at being a cop in New York City before 2020, it was a challenging job. It's always been a challenging job. My father was in law enforcement. He was a corrections officer. He was a cop first. He was a subway cop and then a corrections officer. So it was always a difficult job, but it still is a difficult job. But it was not, prior to 2020, a very dangerous job. It was very rare for a New York City cop to be killed. There was actually a better chance for a New York City cop to shoot one of their own than to be shot by a bad guy. Right. 2020 changed everything. Now it is dangerous to be a cop. New York City cops get killed now. That was not a thing. What changed? What made it so violent? The perfect storm of the black market. We decided, with all our intelligence, that we already had a problem with our kids. Our kids are already lonely. Our kids are already lost. That was happening before COVID. But now that COVID hits, we decide, you know what we're going to do? We're going to make sure none of them can go to school. None of them can go to work. We're going to write them a little bit of check to give them a little bit of money, but that's about it. And we're going to shut our market down so that now everything in a black market's more expensive. So now all the thugs went, wow, so the black market's more expensive? And you've just given me a bunch of recruits sitting on the corner. Awesome. So now the gangbangers have grabbed all the recruits and there is violence everywhere. Why in the world would there be shootouts in the middle of the street in the middle of the day in Manhattan? Because that is two gangs enforcing their contracts. Because they're in a black market, they can't call the cops, they can't go to court, so they gotta know that, you know, this is my territory and I'll shoot you if I have to, right? They've gotta enforce street justice. That's how that's working. You do that and that's what happens. But there's something else. The other problem we have with violence in New York, particularly New York City, but all the cities, is drug addiction and mental illness. So what else do the lockdowns do? Everyone who was mentally ill now couldn't go get help. They couldn't see their friends. They couldn't see their family when they needed to. They couldn't go see their doctor or therapist. They couldn't get their drugs. Of course they're going to have more problems and be worse and you know, fall down, deteriorate into worse problems. And addicts, same thing. People are saying, well, fentanyl is killing everybody. These people want fentanyl. And I'm sorry, I'm going to say something else. My mother was an addict. So I've seen both sides of this. My mother was a felon. She was convicted. She was a felon. These people who are going after the high, they want fentanyl. They want that high. When they hear someone gets OODs and almost dies, they beg for that. This isn't the Chinese trying to kill us. This is us totally disregarding our addicts, totally disregarding our mentally ill, and now they're going for stuff like this, and it's becoming violent. This is our fault, and we have to fix it. The way to fix it is to begin to care about addicts, about to care about addicts, to care about the mentally ill, and to give our youth some actual purpose. What is killing our youth? What is causing gang shootings? What is causing mass shootings? All the mass shootings that we have, whether school shootings, church shootings, whatever they are, they're young men who are lost. All these men have one thing and don't have another. They all have some kind of prescription, the psychotropic drugs, because they're all somehow hurting. And two, what they don't have is a girlfriend. They don't have a girlfriend. What does that mean? They don't have relationships. What is killing our children, whether it's in gang violence in the streets or mass shooting in the churches or schools, is lack of purpose, lack of community, and loneliness. Deal with those three things, our addicts and our mentally ill, you can solve this violence problem. That's the issue. Not more or less cops or defund the police or arrest everybody. None of those things are the answer. It is what I just told you. And I have plans to deal with all of those if you want to hear them.
No, and the bottom line is that that is the essential problem. You got to deal with this on the front of it, not on the back of it.
Yes, okay? Thank you. And yes.
This is what the problem is. Okay. In addition, you mentioned something else quickly, and that is that it became more lucrative.
Yes.
To run an underground business, let's call it, okay? Mm-hmm. And once you did that, now the violence level is going to increase by default because, you know what, you had something, maybe it was in your possession, you had $20,000 worth of drugs. Now that drugs is worth $50,000.
Yep.
Okay? And we're talking about low-level dealers here. We're not talking about the big boys, the big fish, okay?
Right.
But if you do that and all of a sudden you more than double the value of street drugs, okay, in a matter of a couple of months, violence is going to increase.
Yes. People will see that. They'll now say, you know what? This is a lot of money. It's worth shooting a cop in their eyes now. That's why cops get shot now. That did not happen before. Now it does.
Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so I don't expect you to solve everything else in the world. But I do want you to tell people where they can go. Okay, online especially to support what it is you're doing right now. Trying to sign the petitions, and I had one guy say, "Look, I don't sign any of that stuff," and I get it because you know there's a lot of people out there running games and this and that.
Yes, that's true.
But this is important.
So what I want to say is, if you want to see my policies, all my policies are literally, I'm the only candidate who actually has policies, and they're actually right there on my website. You can go to LarrySharp.com. My policies are right there, or you can also check out all my videos at my YouTube page, Larry Sharp, Twitter. I'm on everything. Instagram, TikTok. I'm on all the things. Facebook. Look up Larry Sharp. I'm right there. And if you want to help, there's two ways you can help. One, if you've got cash, I can always take donations. As long as you're an American citizen, I can take donations from you. I'm happy to take them. My maximum I can take from any individual is $44,000. So I know you were thinking you're giving me $45,000. Don't do it. You get me in trouble. Just do $44,000 or less and we'll be fine. Or if you're not in a spot where you can donate, no worries. I need volunteers also. And if you can't officially volunteer, no worries. Like, share, and comment on all my social media stuff. I get most of my press through social media. If you want to help on my social media, anything you can do is going to help. If I'm able to make an impact in New York, we'll make an impact everywhere.
Exactly. Look, the banner at the top of LarrySharp.com is Rethinking Government, Empowering People.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So how do you get more concise of a message than that? You don't. That's the answer there. And by the way, we covered safety last during this discussion, but it's at the top of the concerns here on the front page of the website.
Yep. So
Larry Sharp, once again, is spelled, Larry, please, you guys know how to spell Larry. Sharp, S-H-A-R-P-E. Okay. And again, he said the E is for electable.
Yes.
But there you go. Sharp with an E. And I'll give you the final word here, and we'll let you go because I know you got a lot of other things to do.
If you are unhappy with how our country's going, if you're tired of people just yelling back and forth, if you're tired of watching our nation just deteriorate and keep fighting, we have to do something different. And I know you might say this is the most important election of our lifetime. I hear it all the time, but it isn't. Why? Because, okay, the left wins now, then the right wins after that. Whatever you might be thinking, remember something. Bush got us Obama. Obama got us Trump. Trump got us Biden. Nobody's winning. It's just a shift back and forth. That's all it is. And imagine if Trump wins again, and then next time a Democrat wins. Now it's every 4 years we shift back and forth. The only way we do this is to change. Vote third party. vote Libertarian.
There you go. Larry Sharp, once again, the Libertarian candidate for the governor of New York. And what can I say? I guess this will be the second time I say I would endorse this guy. If I could vote for him, I would. And I hope that you, listening to me in New York, do so. And again, he can accept help from anywhere. Social media, I'll give you guys the links. I'll give you the link to the website and everything in the show notes for those of you catching the podcast. And thank you, Mr. Sharp. I think we're going to have another conversation, though.
Thank you, sir. Happy to have it.
Excellent. Anyway, stick around. The Ocelli Effect will return after this.